Morning. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of time, if I might.
Okay.
My name is Tom Seymour. I'm here today on behalf of the appellant Fred Palador, and here to address the question of whether a person who is unlawfully coerced into making payment to his wife's creditors is entitled to recover those payments under Washington law, under the theories advanced in our complaint.
Counsel, I have some questions. At the time that this lawsuit was commenced by Mr. Palador,
yes,
was his wife, Ms. Taylor, then in bankruptcy? The record doesn't make that clear.
I don't know offhand.
I won't take testimony from the witnesses.
She may have been in bankruptcy at that time. I'm not positive.
Okay, let me ask another question. It appears from the record that the trial judge in this case assumed that Mr. Palador was not a real party in interest under Rule 17. Is that correct?
Presumably, yes, Your Honor.
Okay, let's assume for purposes of this argument that we disagree with that, that we believe that for purposes of the allegations, consumer protection, et cetera, that he was a real party in interest under Rule 17. So the question may be, given that assumption, was the court correct because Taylor was another real party in interest and was not part of this lawsuit?
Well, Your Honor, I appreciate Your Honor's recognition that there's not necessarily a single real party in interest. I don't believe there's any basis to conclude that Nancy Taylor is a real party in interest with respect to the claim for the return of these funds and for a claim with respect to the payment of these funds, because the funds were simply never payable to her, paid to her, never in her possession.
So it's your position that under no theory is Taylor a real party in interest? Is that
for,
my understanding?
For these claims, yes. The fact that Mr. Palador, as a convenience, wrote the name of the payee as Dream on futon, I can understand the argument. I don't agree with the argument, but I can understand the argument that that makes Dream on Futon a real party in interest. And even though the funds went directly from Mr. Palador's account to the respondent's account, and even though Dream on Futon never went through the Dream on Futon's account, I can at least understand that argument. But with respect to Nancy Taylor being a real party in interest on these claims, with respect to the return of Fred Palador's funds, that I don't understand, and it can't be because the payment was of an obligation of Nancy Taylor's, because if that's the case, the authorities that we've cited, that both parties have cited, would be wrong. The authorities that talk about where a party makes a payment under duress on behalf of someone else and is entitled to repayment, because those authorities also make clear that the person who, the example in my link is a father whose son was threatened with being prosecuted and thrown into prison, and the father made the payment. Now he made the payment on his son's behalf. Now, if that turns the son into the real party in interest, and the claim for a return of the funds were the son's, and not the father's, that's basically the argument that I understand them to be making, is that when you make somebody because the payment was made on behalf of Nancy Taylor, that's what converts her into the real party in interest. That's what I understand their argument to be, and I don't see any authority that actually supports that.
I don't want to totally eat up all your time, but your answer suggests that Dream on Futon may be considered a real party in interest. Do I understand you correctly?
I guess my position is that I at least understand the argument, but I disagree with it, and I don't think it would be. And I also think that then that in any case, the correct action by the court is to bring that party into the lawsuit rather than to dismiss the litigation.
One final question: is Dream On Futon an assumed name, or is it a corporation?
It's a separate corporation.
Your okay.
With respect to the unjust enrichment claim, I'd like to draw the court's attention specifically to the case cited in both parties' briefs of Bailey Communications. And in that case, the party's contractual claim against the party who received the funds failed. The fraud claim, the tort claim against that party failed. The unjust enrichment claim was not only successful, but that on the motion to dismiss in that claim, the court reversed and sent it down with directions to enter judgment in favor of the plaintiff, because it was so clear as to what had actually transpired. And I believe that the record is extremely clear here. What happened, that Fred the funds were Fred Palador's on that morning, and the only reason he paid those funds over was because of the unlawful leverage that the respondents obtained, and because of the threats that they communicated to him in his presence, and with the understanding and full knowledge that the money they were negotiating for was coming directly from Fred Palador.
Is he also a shareholder in Dream On Futon?
No, Your Honor.
At least a beneficial owner as a result of being the spouse of a shareholder?
Well, Your Honor, the only evidence on the record is that she was the sole owner and sole officer of the corporation, and that the funds that Fred Palador advanced.
You might have this in mind for rebuttal, and that is, how does the community property overlay all of this?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Morning. My name is Brian Page. I represent the Flax defendants. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for Mr. Gibbs, counsel for some of the other respondents in the case, to make a point he wishes to address.
I'll just run it from 10, and when you get to 2, you'll know it's time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'll ask you the same question I asked opposing counsel. The trial court apparently reached the conclusion that Palador was not a real party in interest. Am I correct on that?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, let's assume that we disagree with that, that he was a real party in interest. And let's further assume there were other, at least one other real party in interest. How does that affect the determination we should make under Rule 17?
Well, I first disagree that he was a real party in interest, and I'll address that later. But if he was, and if there was a second real party in interest, CR 17 says there should be allowed a reasonable time for the real party interest to be substituted or joined or somehow ratify the claims. The trial court in this case found that a reasonable time had elapsed between the time the real party in interest objection had been raised and the time the trial court entered the order of dismissal. That time was 28 days in between the motion being brought and the hearing and the order of dismissal being entered. Within those 28 days, they took no action to either attempt to join Ms. Taylor or Dream On Futon as a real party, as a plaintiff in the case.
Does Rule 17 address the circumstance where there is more than one real party in interest and the plaintiff is actually a real party in interest?
It doesn't appear to. There may be cases out there. We didn't look into that. But I don't think Mr. Palador was a real party in interest. And
Judge Cox asked you to assume that he was.
He did. He did. I still think the Rule 17 says you have to give him a reasonable amount of time to add or substitute before the case is dismissed, and if you don't add or substitute them within the reasonable amount of time, if you read the rule in converse, it would appear to say that the trial court can dismiss the case.
Well, we have another rule, CR 19, that says if you fail to join a necessary party, the court can make a determination to dismiss the case if you decline to join them as either a plaintiff or defendant. Would that provide a basis for affirming the trial court in this instance, since Dream on Futon wasn't a party?
It could. We didn't raise that issue in our motion at the trial court level, but we certainly could have. Having Ms. Taylor be either the sole plaintiff or one of the plaintiffs in the case is important for a few reasons.
Why Ms. Taylor rather than Dream on Futon? And go ahead with your answer.
Sure. The first reason why it's important to have either the only real party interest or both of them there is so that the determination or the resolution of the case can have its proper res judicata effect on everybody who has who is a real party in interest. And the second important reason is so the defendants can bring any defenses they may have against the proper plaintiffs. If Ms. Taylor or Dream on Futon isn't a party to the case, there may be defenses that the defendants have against her that they wouldn't be able to raise solely against Mr. Palador. On the issue of should it be Ms. Taylor or Dream on Futon, I don't know if that matters, but it appears Ms. Taylor might be the proper
person. Taylor's in bankruptcy, which compounds getting her to be a party. I don't know what the record reflects on whether Dream on Futon was in bankruptcy.
So it's a little unclear. She was the tenant under the lease. She signed it individually, DBA, Dream on Futon. We submitted to the trial court her bankruptcy petitions. She filed bankruptcy individually, enlisted Dream on Futon as a DBA and one of her assets.
Your answer suggests that at the time of this lawsuit then, that she had filed a petition in bankruptcy.
She had. Okay. She had not yet received a discharge.
No, I understand, but the petition in bankruptcy had been filed as of the date of commencement of this lawsuit?
That's right.
All right.
And that's one of the defenses certainly we would have against claims by Ms. Taylor. She didn't list her claims against the defendants in her bankruptcy. One of the defenses we have would be judicial estoppel. We may not have that defense against Mr. Palador since he didn't declare bankruptcy.
Does our record reflect whether this was a no-asset bankruptcy?
We put all of her petitions, both her original petitions and her amended petitions, in the record. They're attached to my declaration. I'd have to go back.
The court enters an order either abandoning any assets owned by the debtor or determining there are no non-exempt assets. Does the record reflect anything on that in this case?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. What I do know is she didn't list any claims she had against the defendants as an asset, and you have to do that in order for the bankruptcy trustee to be able to assess whether he wants to pursue them or abandon them. She didn't list them. We would have a defense that that she's judicially estopped from bringing her claims. Now, she could maybe reopen the bankruptcy somehow. I'm not a bankruptcy lawyer, so I don't know the ins and outs of that, but she could try to reopen it and get the bankruptcy trustee to abandon it and then bring them in that instance. But I don't think Mr. Palador is a real party in interest for a few reasons. He wasn't the tenant. He didn't owe the back rent. Nobody made any demands to him that he pay the back rent that was owed by Ms. Taylor. Nobody made any threats to him that Ms. Taylor was going to be locked out or evicted if Mr. Palador didn't pay any of the back rent she owed. Mr. Palador then brings claims for unjust enrichment, for Consumer Protection Act violation, and for civil conspiracy. And on the unjust enrichment claim, he grounds that on the idea that he was coerced or subject to duress. And
Well, does he have the alternate sort of a white knight theory that someone else was in distress and being wrongfully threatened, and he rescued that person, and that person who received the benefit of his rescue was unjustly enriched?
They haven't presented any authority to support that argument, Your Honor.
Counsel, if we go back to one of your original answers, that the whole purpose of this rule is to have everybody in one lawsuit so that claims can be adjudicated, do we really need to reach the question whether he was a real party in interest? Stated another way, if there's somebody who should have been part of this, be it Taylor, Dreamon, or a combination, we don't really need to determine whether he's a real party in interest, do we?
I suppose the court could say, no, there is another real party interest that wasn't added to the case within a reasonable time, and therefore the trial court properly dismissed the case. I'll reserve the rest of my time for Mr. Gibbs. Thank you.
Great.
Please the court. My name is William Gibbs, and I represent the Key West defendants and its owner, Greg Purcell.
Your client got a call to come change locks and a lot of problems after.
That's right. Changed them left, and he's gone. He didn't have any role in any of the rest of this dispute at all, at least that's of record in this case, and to my knowledge, he didn't have any at all. So his involvement in this is subject to some other motions and subsequent proceedings and another appeal in this case. But I'll try to address some of the court's comments.
There is another appeal pending?
Yes. We were awarded attorney's fees under CR 11 and the frivolous claim statute against the defendant and his attorney for bringing my client into the case.
And you were dismissed, as I understand it, on this motion.
That's correct.
Was there a second grounds for dismissal of your client?
We argued in our motion for attorney's fees that there was no legitimate basis to ever have brought our client into the case for it, among other reasons, just the fact that he had no involvement. There was some other case law out there that would
absolve it. The court appears to have adopted that because it awarded fees.
Yes. So that appeal's out there and will be heard at some point down the road. There's been the briefing hasn't even been done yet. So that's the status on that. I think I see a little bit where the panel might be going, so I'll try to address it. Assuming the court finds that there are multiple real parties in interest in this case and only one of them was joined, under the joinder rules of CR 19, all the necessary parties should have been here. Our dismissal was appropriate. This panel has the authority, even though it hasn't been argued, to affirm the trial court on a correct basis, even if it isn't the basis the trial court used to reach its ruling. And clearly, complete justice in this case, whether it involved Dreamon Futon as some kind of separate legal entity or Nancy Taylor as an individual. It was her business premises that were trespassed on, if anyone was. It was her business that was locked out, not Mr. Palador's business. She clearly, or her business, or a combination of them, are real parties who should have brought this lawsuit or should have been made parties to any lawsuit brought by Mr. Palador. I think I'm out of time.
You are. Thank you. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. We're addressing a number of issues that are not actually on the record in front of the court. Some of the matters can actually be addressed, I believe, properly by judicial notice, and that's with respect to Ms. Taylor's bankruptcy case, which would never need to be reopened. And in fact, the case is still open. So far as I'm aware, the last I checked was maybe a month or two ago. So far as I'm aware, that case is still open, and also I believe appropriate for judicial notice, the court can take note of the fact that after this claim and after the court's ruling, Ms. Taylor did amend her schedules in order to reflect that somebody believes that she has a claim in here.
What's your position on whether the Futon Corporation or Ms. Taylor is a real party in interest?
With respect to the claims that we haven't brought, with respect to the trespass and with respect to the breach of contract, those are Ms. Taylor's claims. With respect to
the CPA claim?
Well, I believe that all three of them might have CPA claims with different damages and with different...
Same theory of liability?
with small variations for each of them, I presume. But the but each of them, I believe, is able to establish the five elements necessary to establish a CPA claim.
What about the corporation with respect to the unjust enrichment claim, given the identity of the payee on the check?
Well, given the identity of the payee, I guess any way you look at it, each leg of the transaction is subject to being set aside because of the nature of the duress that invoked. If we're considering that, if we're formally accepting that this was a transfer to Dream on Futon and a transfer from Dream on Futon to the respondents, each leg of that was caused by the duress.
And well, by the corporation not being a party, or are the defendants exposed to two judgments for $10,000 each?
Well, I don't believe so, Your Honor, although I guess to the extent it's possible, the correct remedy is to bring Dream on Futon in as a party. But an unjust enrichment, the unjust enrichment claim is directly against the person who's got the funds, and there's no question where the funds came from and who ended up with them. And so in that part, I think that the real party in interest is Fred Palin. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Next up is